This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. The far-reaching dangers of smoking have long been known, for decades, as a matter of fact. This nasty habit has been implicated in causing and exacerbating a long list of deadly diseases. So you'd think we'd know better than to light up or chew. But listen to this. If left unchecked, tobacco will kill 1 billion, that's with a B, billion people in the 21st century. This fact is the driving force behind an organization called ASH, A-S-H, which stands for Action on Smoking and Health. And I'm proud to have the executive director with us today, Laurent Huber. Welcome to HeartWise.
Thank you for having me.
Why is tobacco use still a problem? Doesn't everyone know the dangers?
Unfortunately, we still have a large number of smokers and about 6 million people a year die every year. So it's the number one cause of preventable death and disease in the world. So even though we should all know better, it still kills a lot of people. And this is because in the case of tobacco, we do have a vector of disease, which is an industry, which in many ways tries to market its products and does everything to expand its market share. So that keeps, unfortunately, a lot of people addicted. A lot of young kids, for example, fall into this, vulnerable populations. And what we see, unfortunately, also in low-income countries, where there's an increase in smoking, even that happens. So, unfortunately, it's still a problem today. It's not a problem of the past yet.
Do I hear you saying that at least in this country, people are believing the marketing over the science on this thing?
Unfortunately, it does still happen, where there's some people who are at least are still influenced by the marketing. And also, in many parts of the U.S., not everyone is equally protected against the industry and even against smoking or secondhand smoke. So, for example, in cities like New York City, you will be fairly protected, where you will have tobacco products that are going to be relatively highly priced, so they're not as highly accessible to youth or the poor, the most vulnerable populations, and you will not be able to smoke in public places. But that is not quite true in some other jurisdictions. If you go to some other state where you unfortunately can still smoke in public places, cigarette prices are fairly low, taxes on cigarettes are fairly low, and they're still inexpensive and quite accessible to the young and the poor and vulnerable populations.
Where did ASH come in? How did ASH come to be, and what is it trying to do?
ASH was first formed almost 50 years ago, and it was as a response to the Surgeon General report. Mm-hmm. And in order to address that, that was the time when the science became much more accepted,
right,
that tobacco was a source of cause of death and disease. Then ASH worked to support policies that would work in reducing smoking, but also in helping non-smokers for a number of years. So one of our key areas of work until the early 2000s was to push and promote for smoke-free environments in order to make sure that everyone was protected and not exposed to secondhand smoke, as you know. A lot of people would smoke in public places at the time.
Yes.
Now that we've seen much progress in this area, we've also been working on global mechanisms or treaties, basically, to address the issue of tobacco. And we're very, very fortunate in the area of public health, where we do have an international treaty that addresses the global burden of disease caused by tobacco. And that is the World Health Organization Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which is a United Nations treaty exclusively focused to tobacco. And the reason why we have this treaty is because of the magnitude of the problem. So many people killed by tobacco, as you said. If we don't take action, 1 billion people this century, given the magnitude of the disease, even the impact it has on the economy, according to the United Nations Development Program, the head of the UNDP, tobacco would cost the global economy up to 2% of its global GDP.
Wow.
If you even just take 1%, using 2014 figures, that could be almost $1 trillion a year. So it's costly to the world.
Well, now, ASH has its work cut out for it, because what are you dealing with here? You're dealing with the tobacco industry. How invasive and how powerful is this industry? Give us some examples of how this industry can roll over governments and people and local entities. How big is it, and how is it showing how big it is?
It's quite powerful. So just the revenues of the tobacco industries dwarf even the GDPs of a number of countries. If it were a country, it would be among the top 100 GDPs in the world. And what they've done, they're actually suing governments when they implement policies to protect the health of their citizens. For example, the country of Uruguay, a very small country, I believe it has about 3 million inhabitants, they implemented strong policies to protect the health of their citizens. In this case, they had large health warnings on their packages of cigarettes, and they were also banning distinctions between different brands within one brand and anything that would suggest that one product would be less harmful than the other, given that, for example, the issue of low and light cigarettes, we know it doesn't do anything in terms of protecting the health of the consumer. So when they implemented this policy, Philip Morris International sued them using a bilateral investment treaty, an agreement between Switzerland and Uruguay, and they used this to block the implementation of those policies. So what they've done basically, in essence, is bully small governments or jurisdictions as they implement those policies. And because in many cases, as you know, health departments are strapped for cash. They're not often extremely wealthy. They're already dealing with a number of issues, diseases, in some cases infectious diseases, and so on and so forth. And then they're being attacked by a powerful corporation as they try to do the right thing and implement policies that we know work in protecting the health of our citizens.
Now, Mr. Huber, if you were to walk the halls of Philip Morris or any of the other tobacco manufacturing people, are you going to meet people who say, you know, we're killing people and we don't mind? We're doing bad things to the world, but who cares? We're making money. Are there actually people who will say that to you, or do they think they're doing something different and not harming the people that we say they are?
Well, it's now finally they're recognizing, in most cases, that tobacco does indeed cure. For a while, they were suggesting that no, and they were trying to minimize the harm of tobacco. Now, it's interesting because on one side, they recognize it, but they're very willing to continue not only selling it, but expanding in new markets and places where tobacco is not yet used. So, for example, look at Africa, a poor continent, a continent with a lot of young people as a percentage of the population, and a place that's also dealing with a number of infectious diseases. And the tobacco industry is making it very clear, and through all of their strategic planning documents and even their shareholder documents and their yearly reports, that they plan on expanding in those emerging markets. And even in the Middle East, where we know the crisis that we're dealing in that region, they're very, very happy to expand in those markets. So unfortunately, they seem to be very pleased to continue selling those products, being very aware that they kill, as long as it makes them money, and which I find this to be rather unethical.
Well, absolutely. I'm trying to think, you know, are they like the gun manufacturers? We don't kill people. People take our product and kill people. Well, people don't have to buy cigarettes and kill themselves. We're just going to put it out there, and it's up to them. Is that what they're thinking? Are they passing the buck on this thing, saying it's not our fault, it's the fault of the people who buy our product and use our product?
Well, to some extent, it's a very unique product. I mean, tobacco is the only product that will kill, according to the World Health Organization, half of its consumers if they use it as intended. And I've looked at some other research, for example, from Australia, suggesting that actually up to two-thirds, they suggest that it's more than half of its consumers, two-thirds of the consumers will die from this. So the industry in this case, it's not taking the responsibility it should have for the harm it causes. And that's exactly what they do. They put the burden of the responsibility of the causes of smoking on the smoker and on governments also, because it's actually governments and us, all the rest of the citizens, who have to then, to some extent through our taxes, pay for the harm that it causes, who basically have to take the burden of this product. And the industry is basically, to a large extent, walking scot-free out of this one. And to some extent, and there are a number of legal experts now who are looking at the legal responsibility of this industry, given that they knowingly sell a product that kills more than half of its consumers.
Well, Mr. Huber, this makes me mad. I mean, I feel my blood pressure rising here, and I'm thinking, why on earth Would someone knowingly do that? How do you deal with the anger that I'm sure that you feel from time to time? Because your face is directly in it. You are dealing with this on a daily basis. How do you deal with the anger personally when you face this kind of industry and this kind of mass murder?
And one wonders, where's the global outrage with this?
Yes.
And often the argument or the excuse is that, well, it's a legal consumer good. Mm. Now, we have to recognize that if this product enter the market today, it would never go through any regulatory process. It would never be approved to go into the market. And what we're dealing here is with a product that has been legalized and then heavily marketed for many, many years and has been kind of grandfathered into our economic system.
Yes.
And our markets. And that is the problem, unfortunately. And it is really, really frustrating. And rather than getting angry at this stage, is to just to take action. And that's action on smoking and health, basically. And what we are is about changing the norms, changing the policies, and encouraging governments to stop this irresponsible marketing of this very dangerous product.
Mm. We're talking with Laurent Huber, the executive director of ASH, which is Action on Smoking and Health. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, more with Mr. Huber about smoking. And I want to talk about North America, here in America. What are we doing here? What are some of the things that ASH has been able to accomplish in this country to help protect people from a product that will kill 2/3 of the people who use it? We'll learn that answer on our return, so stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham, and here's your biblical prescription for life. Have you ever longed for a different prescription, one without dangerous side effects? Everyone is concerned, or should be concerned, about side effects or adverse reactions when taking a medication. Well, today I want to explain to you what a biblical prescription is. Let's turn to James 1:5. This is our biblical prescription for today. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. Well, a biblical prescription is all about asking God for wisdom. Wisdom from the scriptures to prevent and treat disease. The Bible applies to all aspects of life. In our biblical prescription for life segments, I will point out scripture, show the evidence-based science behind the scripture, and how this scripture chemically changes us. For more information, I want you to go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Before we get back to our guest, I want to invite you to interact with Heartwise Ministries. Perhaps you have a question or comment to share. Is there a topic you'd like for us to discuss on this program? Have we helped you in some way with the information or resources we've made available to you each week? If you're a computer person, you're in luck. You can visit the heartwiseministries.org website and leave a message in the contact section. Or you can click on over to Facebook and join our family by liking Heartwise Ministries. Here you can enter your thoughts and suggestions, enjoy Dr. Markham's latest video blogs, and learn more about the many activities of this global outreach. A lot of exciting things happening at Heartwise. Of course, you can call us as well. Here's our phone number for non-medical queries and comments. 423-238-0048. That's 423-238-0048. We're here to serve you. Please feel free to use any of these avenues to communicate with us. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Laurent Huber. He is the executive director of ASH, which stands for Action on Smoking and Health. And they've been around for many, many years, ever since the Surgeon General, way back when, said that, hey, smoking's not good for you. They've been trying to get people to understand that and for governments to take action and for industries to be responsible for what they do. Mr. Huber, let's talk about here in America. What are some of the battles you are facing here in the past and in the present? And is there reason for hope in this country?
Yes, there is reason for hope, given that prevalence has gone down to a large extent and less people smoke today. However, there's also reason for concern. What we see is that there's a shift where now the people who smoke are the most vulnerable populations. Low-income populations. It's among the poor that you'll see the highest prevalence. So we have the problem we face is that there's a little bit of an out-of-sight, out-of-mind problem. Now that we have a lot of jurisdictions like in New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Boston, the wealthier parts of the country are now protected by some policies that we know work, mm-hmm. like smoke-free policies and so on and so forth. But in lower income communities, we don't have that same level of protections. And even what we see is different marketing. For example, according to some studies, there's more marketing in African American communities of tobacco products. You will see more advertising and more very specific brands, such as, for example, menthol cigarettes. So there is quite an inequity issue that needs to be addressed in the United States. And some of the measures that we do know work and are being implemented all around the world are unfortunately not equally implemented in the U.S. So again, if you live in New York City, you will be protected. You will most likely not have to go work in a smoking environment. But if you live in Kentucky, you could be working in a restaurant, be a non-smoker, have very little opportunity to look for other jobs, and have to deal with smoking every day that you go to work. Or if you work in a casino, in some other jurisdictions also, where casinos are not being protected from secondhand smoke-free policies, and then workers have to go and be exposed to secondhand smoke on a regular basis. Also, unfortunately, there's still some marketing in the United States in some print media advertising cigarette products. And in many parts of the country, cigarettes are still relatively inexpensive. So it depends on where you are in the United States. You will not have the same level of protection when it comes to cigarette exposure. Another thing that's interesting is if you look just now, even across the border, you go to Canada and you will see large health warnings on packages of cigarettes. If you go down to Mexico, you will also see health warnings on packages of cigarettes. In the United States, the FDA tried to implement such policies and tried to have large health warnings showing the harm tobacco causes, but they were sued by the tobacco industry, and we still don't have good health warnings. So that means that young people and others, they can still buy packages of cigarettes that are unfortunately very glamorous and do not show the harm it causes. So what's happening in the United States compared to other countries, I mentioned earlier that there is an international treaty, right, which has been joined by more than 180 countries, representing about 90% of the world population. And the United States was part of the negotiations, a sign on to the treaty, not yet ratified. But the measures that are in the treaty, which are basically a recipe to address the tobacco epidemic, so that recipe is not used all around the United States in the same way. So unfortunately, we have a lot of people in the U.S. who are still inadequately protected from this very dangerous product.
You know, Mr. Huber, being in this business at ASH, and by the way, listener, the address for ASH on the internet is www.ash.org, if you want to check out some of the press releases they have there, and I have a list of them here. Interesting stuff going on. You guys are busy people there in Washington, D.C. You're based in Washington. What are some of the things that you have found work best on a local level or on a state level, Mr. Huber, for helping people who want cigarettes and smoking and tobacco to be removed from the workplace, from the community? What works best, or at least works some in these areas?
It's local action. And when you ask the local community, what you'll find is like most of the population wants those policies, and they want to be protected from secondhand smoke. So, for example, we're working in partnership with people in upstate New York, in Tri-County area in upstate New York, in the three poorest counties in the states of New York. And those counties seem to have a much higher prevalence than not only the rest of the United States, but also the rest of the state. And what works there, it's local action and trying to encourage and force local legislators, local policymakers, that those policies is what the population wants. They work. And also they can help save a lot of money to the local healthcare system. As you know, given that tobacco is the major cause of disease, cardiovascular diseases, cancers, chronic lung disease, and some of those are very expensive to treat. So by implementing those policies, the local communities and the local state and county health departments can save quite a lot of money. But it requires action and support and ownership by the local governments, who need to do the right thing and protect the health of their citizens instead of protecting the interest of the big tobacco corporation.
I've heard business owners and restaurants, especially restaurant owners, saying, you know, if we ban smoking from our restaurant, people are going to stop coming. They're not going to come. We're going to lose clientele because of this ban. Has ASH, in its studies and review of studies, found this to be true?
No, so this is very interesting because that was exactly the argument that was made in the early stages before the smoke-free policies were put in place. And actually, it's been the exact opposite. And even in jurisdictions that were neighboring jurisdictions, when one would go smoke-free, there was an increase in revenue. People will still go out and eat. People do not go to a restaurant to smoke. And interesting enough, even in bars and nightclubs, and places where you would have very, very entrenched smoking cultures, they've implemented those policies. So, for example, the country where I was born, France, a country where everyone and almost every movie star was pictured with a cigarette in their mouth, they've now implemented those policies. And they found that they have absolutely no impact. They have actually a positive impact on the economy. The implementation of those policies for bars and restaurants will have no negative impact. On the contrary, all of the data, economic data, suggests that, on the contrary, they actually increased revenue as they implement those policies.
If one of my listeners right now says, I want to go out into my community and I want to make a difference, I want to take the cigarettes out of the restaurants, out of the stores, out of the workplace, what is the first thing he or she should do today to start that journey?
They can obviously contact us, get in touch with us, get in touch with local groups and alliances that work on health, and start forming very quickly. If they still are dealing with smoke-free environments and working with some of the coalitions that already exist, given that there is already some action taking place, and start grassroots campaigns basically to demand the right to breathe smoke-free air and demand also the right to have their children protected. And one of the first things is look at what are the policies in your county, your state, your city, given that it varies so much where you are. Unfortunately, here, we're not all protected equally.
Okay.
Well, so staying informed right away about what are the opportunities to engage and see who's working on this area, given that there are a number of organizations and health groups that are really, really pushing for strong local policies.
All right. The organization is called ASH, A-S-H, which stands for Action on Smoking and Health, and their website is www.ash.org. There is contact information you can receive there and resources available to you, and also just a lot of encouragement. We talk a lot about the problems and the struggles of keeping cigarettes out of people's bodies and out of people's environments. But there's some good news, too. As Mr. Huber has said throughout this interview, there are places where it's happening, and we can also help make it happen in our community if we take action. I guess the government listens to us. Are we still we the people? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. It's really, in this case, it's really we the people. We need to ask for this. This is not about prohibition, but this is about implementing the measures that we know work, which are basically banning smoking at all public places, increasing the price of cigarettes so they're not as accessible to the youth and the more vulnerable populations, ban the advertising of this product, given that it's a very unique product, so it doesn't deserve the type of protection that other products have, and having large health warnings on the packages of cigarettes. And also, to some extent, I think we should demand that the corporations be held liable for the harm they cause. It shouldn't be us, the citizens and the taxpayers, having to pay for the damage that this product causes to society. It should be the corporations themselves that should be paying for this damage.
Very good, very good. Laurent Huber is Executive Director of ASH, Action on Smoking and Health. Mr. Huber, thank you so much for being with us today and providing these words of encouragement and guidance. We appreciate it. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Laurent Huber, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.